WKCM. This is Radio Ghana.
A very good evening to you, and you're welcome to Behind the News, our news and current affairs program which examines issues from the perspective of newsmakers and experts. My name is Agatha Samoa, and tonight, NPP lays down the gauntlet as the party adopts its manifesto and officially launches its 2012 campaign to wrest power from the NDC. And from humble beginnings to the top of journalism, 2011 Journalist of the Year, Manasseh Azuria-Wini, would be with us in the studio to share his experiences as a freelance journalist. And you can also join in the discussions via text on 0266 677 5570, 0266 677 5570. Let your comments be brief and as simple as possible. God did not put us on this land to be poor. It is poor leadership that has drawn us backwards. Let us vote out these non-performers, non-achievers, incompetent and inept administration. These are the words of the NPP flagbearer Nene Akufo-Addo at the launch of the party's 2012 campaign launch at Manchagbona at the weekend in Accra. The campaign launch was preceded by the party adopting its manifesto, which has 8 thematic areas. They include education, health, security, infrastructure, a great discipline and economic transformation. Nana said Ghana has the capacity to be a first world nation if Ghanaians believed in themselves and adopted the can-do spirit. Michael Quay Jr. is the NPP Deputy Greater Accra Secretary, and he is on the line to explain some of the issues raised at the rally. You're welcome, Mike.
Yes, very welcome to you. Is it GBC?
Yeah.
Yes,
behind them as well. In the first place, why did the NPP decide to again go to Manchagbona for its campaign launch?
Well, the NPP decided to go to Manchagbona again because we had the National Delegate Congress at the Accra International Conference Center. And after that, we were going to have the launch. So the whole idea was, where is the nearest place, and where is a place where is the soul and the heart of Accra? And I don't think there's none better place than the Manchagbona, which is Gamashi Denche, the heart of Accra itself.
Well, now to the party's manifesto, 8 thematic areas were highlighted. Can you take us through some of them?
Yes. Of course, first of all, Dr. Baumia came and spoke about the issue of transforming our lives, i.e. transforming Ghana, which is the theme of the manifesto. And what we are looking at is moving from a buy and sell economy to what he termed a do and sell economy, i.e. we can also have good education to create or to generate confident, well-skilled Ghanaians. And so when we modernize agriculture, we already have the base, i.e. of skilled workers, people who can man the machine and take us through this modernization that we're talking about. And apart from education and modernization of agri, to transform the healthcare and also the economy in itself. And because I will go into more detail with regard to the education a bit later, with your kind permission, depending on how much you apportion the time, I'd like to start with health.
Yeah.
With regard to health, what the NPP is proposing to do via its leader, Nana Addo-Dankwa Akufo-Addo, is we want to look at access to good quality healthcare. And, madam, if you agree with me, one thing that really happened during the NPP era was to give strong base with regard to the administrative areas of the health center. Because if you're looking at health, and apart from the fact that you want to build hospitals, you do not have good administrative procedures, it is very difficult for the process to work. And so one of the main things that was established is a college of surgeons, physicians, and in that way, we were able to retain a lot of the manpower first, because we used to have this issue of drainage of doctors abroad.
Mm.
So that was the first thing that was put in place. And Nana Adedankwa Akufo-Addo is saying that when he comes, he's going to strengthen that area so that we can retain the ones we've trained in the first place. Then after that, we remember the famous reference when Ronaldo said he went to the Volta region and he was told by one of the people he met on the listening tour, NHIS, Igble, i.e. NHIS, in effect, is not working properly. NHIS is kaput, condemned. And in effect, what we are looking at is, what is the NHIS policy of the NDC? Apart from the fact that they walked out of parliament when it was proposed during the Kufuor regime, they came with another alternative, which is what we call the one-time premium. However, they've not been able to cost this one-time premium, and they've not also been able to implement it for 4 good years.
So what would the NPP do differently?
Yes, and that's what we are saying, that when we come, we are going to strengthen it. Because to say that you'll give us a one-time premium without any costing sounds a bit of a double standard, especially as they asked us to cost our education, which we have done. So we want Ghanaians to ask them how much one-time premium will cost. And what the NPP is going to do is, for example, we're going to look at the areas of pharmaceuticals where we have the problem of fake drugs. This was established also in the NPP time, a biomedicinal center to take care of that. We've heard and we learned that these are not functioning properly. We are also going to look at the maternal or child mortality rate. We all know that during the Kufuor era, the mothers who went to have children were giving birth free. Now, this is not the case. Where someone gave an example that when they went to have their child, they had to deposit 500 Ghana cedis, and even that was not enough. This is very unfortunate, and it's not something that is going to help the mass health agenda, i.e. access to good quality health care, that Nana Adedankwa Akufo-Addo is asking for example. So we are saying that if you don't put those structures in place, then when you even build the health infrastructure, it's either too expensive, not accessible, not affordable for people to be able to even attend to get looked after. And we think that these are the policies that are very important with regard to health. Then we moved on to agriculture, where the NPP, by 2008, we had a 7.4% growth. The last budget that was read by the current NDC government is 2.8%. That is abysmal. That is very worrying. And I think any Ghanaian voter who is going to put aside all the issues of this or that, co-car, violence and all of that, and look at economy, policy, will see that any government that moves from 7.4% growth to 2.8% growth is definitely an abysmal government that should never be voted back into power.
So how will you improve the agri sector?
Oh, we have various things. Before I even go to the Grains Development Board and so on, which we are going to institute, that was started under the Puzia regime. Look at, for example, the Ministry of Fisheries. They had a 7.1% growth. It fell all the way down to 1.7%. That is unacceptable. And the MPP, for example, when it comes to that, we are going to bring back the Ministry of Fisheries, which was scrapped by the NDC government, because obviously that is not a priority with regard to their agricultural policy. They just appointed one deputy minister for fisheries. That is not enough. We need a whole department to take care of fish, which is one of our staple diets, and not just a diet requirement, but a whole industry in terms of business, in terms of employment on its own. Then we're also going to institute the Grain Development Board, which will take care of all the various grains and create markets for them, not just the storage of, but creating markets. And I'm sure you're also aware of the cocoa mass spraying exercise, where we were told by Dr. Akoto that it has become a selective policy, where he has gathered information that if you are not with the ruling party, they skip your farm and go to the next farm to spray. That is a very dangerous practice because, you see, in order for Ghana to achieve the 1 million tons, which was a target set in 2006, certain things had to be put in place. However, after that, this is dwindling, and we are worried that those things that were put in place are not being continued or being misapplied by the current NDC government.
All right, so
we want to ask the Agriculture Minister, Mr. Kwesi Ahoy, that what is going on? how come that these things are dwindling? Nana Akufo-Addo is saying that if by the grace of God he comes to power, he will fix these problems so that agriculture in Ghana will move from the 7.4% where we left it onto even higher ground.
All right, Mike.
Let me move to...
Yeah, for now, just hold the line for us. Peter Buama Otukuno is a member of the NDC communications team and he's joining us on the line. You are welcome, Mr. Otukuno.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Now, God did not put us on this land to be poor. It is poor leadership that has drawn us backwards. These are the words of Nana Akufo-Addo. How do you react to this?
Certainly, I agree with him. I mean, it is only bad leadership that can take us backwards. And bad leadership includes the inability of leaders to be honest to the people, the inability of the leaders to be truthful to their people. And that is one of the reasons why we remain backward. But be that as it may, I've heard a lot of noise about the manifesto launch of the MPP. I would want to just start with a proverb in Akan, which says that Kwatre Kwasu Mifra Ontuma Eya TMD. What it simply means is that the MPP lacks credibility to make any promise, even now that they have brought out their manifesto.
But why do you say they lack credibility?
Yes, when you pick their 2000 manifesto, the promises they made in that manifesto, 70% of the promise was not fulfilled in the 8 years of their reign. When you pick the 2004 manifesto, about 72% of the promises were not fulfilled. And even when you pick the 2008 manifesto, we didn't fly. Some of them are so ridiculous and flies in the face of reason. Look, for instance, in the 2000 manifesto, when you go to page 14, they said that they were going to develop the tourist sector to make it less import intensive and substantially increase its net foreign exchange earnings, granting special credits and technical upgrading to tour bars, lower-end hotels and restaurants to improve their surroundings and services to tourists, which means that they were going to give credits to tour bars to turn them into ultra-modern tourist centers. We should go around. We should go to Nkrumah Circle and ask the Choba operators. Go to Abosoka and ask the Choba operators whether the MPP, after 8 years, were able to convert them into ultra-modern tourist centers.
Well, Peter, for now, they have come out with their new manifesto, which has highlighted the 8 strong thematic areas. You talk about economy, security, education, health. Is the NDC in any way shaken by this?
We are not. We are not deterred at all. We are not worried. And it doesn't look even frightening, especially when they are not speaking the truth in most of the issues. And especially when they are being exposed by themselves. When you listen to Professor Zambafo last Saturday, he really exposed the lies by the flag bearer of the MPP to the extent that when you listen to his IEA presentation, he indicated that the 2012-2013 academic year of the SHS, they are going to spend 78 million Ghana Cedi on the free SHS program. But when you listen to Professor Jambafo, he made the point that the 78 million Ghana Cedi was going to be from September to December. So it is only one term allocation that was made. But even with that, when you divide the number of students in senior high schools, which comes close to about 720,000, by the 78 million they are quoting for one term, you get 108 Ghana Cedi for every student. And every parent who has a child in the senior high school will tell you that they are paying sometimes more than 200 to 300 Ghana Cedi per term on their wards. So clearly, when you put this in the face of the promise that is being made by the MPP, it looks very, 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 very ridiculous.
So you think their policy of free SHS is not feasible?
It is absolutely not feasible. That is not to say that we are saying that it is impossible on any day to do free SHS education. What we mean is that it is good for our children to have free senior high school education, to have free basic education. But the current circumstances in Ghana does not allow for any government at all to be able to implement any kind of free SHS. Even with the SQ, which was enshrined in the 1992 constitution, as we speak, we have not been able to make it completely free and compulsory for basic school from kindergarten to junior high school. But you see, there is a lot of inconsistency in the promises being made by the MPP. In 2008, They promised free public university education. In 2012, they have shrunk the promise to three SHS. And even with the shrinking, they always remain confused whether it is for business school or it's for secondary school. I heard the flag bearer of the MPP, Nana Akufo-Addo, say that it's going to make from KJ to SHS free. So we don't know whether they are going to make SHS free or they are going to make KG free.
All right,
but see that as it may, we must bear in mind that the MPP made this particular promise in 2008. And the time they were making this promise, they have not even paid feeding grants to the northern secondary schools. And they had closed down for close to about 6 weeks. Yet they were promising free university, they were promising free SHS. So when it comes to this matters of manifesto, when it comes to this matters of lofty promises and so on and so forth, it all goes with credibility. And the MPP lacks the credibility, they lack the honesty, and they are not truthful with the people of Ghana.
All right, hold the line for us. Let me go back to Mike. Mike?
Yes, hello.
Yeah, you heard Peter Bwama Otukno. He said some of your promises or your manifesto promises are not feasible.
Yes, I want you to remind my brother Otukuno that the doubting Thomases are never the leaders of this world. When we said we were going to bring about free NHIS, Peter Otukuno's party, with our current president, John Mahama, as a member of parliament then, they walked out of parliament. They said it was not feasible. By the grace of God, with hard work and good strategy, it became feasible. And of course, the NDC are shaking. Why are they not? Definitely shaking because if you read even my Joy Online today, there's a schoolgirl who approached John Mahama and told him, President, give us free education. I beg you, give us free education so that we can be able to go to school well. And I'm sure Ghanaians, we are all aware that President John Mahama himself went for free secondary education, even though he went to a private school for primary school. So anybody who says, if we are trying to do free SHS, we must pay all kindergarten free, I don't understand them. Because I know that a lot of people, including President John Mahama, went to free secondary school in the north, and yet he went to boarding school in Achimota Primary School to where he paid fees. So I don't understand why the negativity. When we talk about it, they tell us about private schools. I am very shocked. Because when this government was supplying free school uniforms, they didn't take it to Roman Reed School or Ghana International. When they were doing the school feeding program, did they take it to Roman Reed School? No. Obviously, the negativity to bring the whole thing down is very, very funny in that regard. The same people are saying that parents pay 200 or so per ward, and that ours is 100 and something. Don't they realize that some of the things that are being paid is to the government, and so the government doesn't have to repay itself? But of course, if they have to pay for services like school feeding program, they have to pay for cement, they have to pay for something, fine. But all the various taxes and things that used to be charged on certain items, all the various things that the government itself used to charge at certain rates, entertainment and all those things, are going to be taken off. So obviously, there won't be a cost to the government if the government is taking them for free.
Well, Mike, there are some concerns also that if this policy is carried through, other sectors of the economy will suffer.
Oh, madam, you see, in life, we have something called priority. Every government in the past and at present has done something called prioritization. Let me give you one example. When it came to the debt fund, of which Nana Akufo-Addo says he's going to use 40%, President Kufuor focused on the university. President Mills focused on school under three. And Nanadu says he is going to focus on free secondary school education. So there's no problem there. It's about priority and where you will put the money. When you move on into detail, with regard to the sources, we are looking at the oil revenue, for example, the GMPC benchmark revenue. And from that, we are looking at 50 to 60% of the benchmark revenue. Then we are also looking at our annual budget funding amount. For that too, we are looking again at 50 to 60%. And then the GET fund, I've already told you, 40%. Now, even at our present revenue streams, and we always know it goes up with each year, If you look at even 2013, our expenditure with regard to even infrastructure, which includes buses, which includes technical vocational, which includes cluster schools, plus the recurrent costs added to the capital cost, comes up to an expenditure of 754 million for the first batch. And the resources we are going to get are a minimum of 938 million. That in itself shows a surplus of 183 million. In 2014, you see the same thing of 1.0005 billion, an expenditure of 965 million. Again, a very big surplus. So these are the figures and projections that we have made, and we have costed it.
All right, Mike.
I love it. Let me just land on this point, madam.
All right.
I would love you, the journalist, to ask the NDC, because somehow you seem to ask us. Yes, we'll answer, and by the grace of God, it will work. But the NDC should also answer us. How much is the one-time premium going to cost? How much is it going to cost generally and per person? They have never been able to tell the people of Ghana for four whole years. And yet they said Nanado went on hard talk, and it took him 5 months to bring the answers. 5 months to 4 years when you are in government. That is abysmal and unacceptable.
All right, so let's
stop being negative and rather explain their policy and realize that the MPP test is going to work. What is their alternative?
All right, let me take a response. Let me take a response from Mr. Otukuno.
Yes.
My sister, I think I feel very sad this evening. Why? Because upon the fact that I have right now exposed the MPP that they are not truthful to the people of Ghana, my very good brother is still making a lot of falsehood on your program. I think when you look at the NHIS that he talked about, he said they brought free NHIS. There is nothing like free NHIS. You pay your premium every year, and you get health service from the premium you pay every year. But even that aside, it is public notice. It is commonplace that it was the NDC that started the pilot of the health insurance scheme in Ghana. And I recall somewhere on the 18th of April 2000, where Dr. Adukufo, who was an MP in Parliament, chastising the NDC government for wasting money on the health insurance pilot. So I just don't understand it when the MPP says that they started the NHIS when we were doubting Thomas's and we didn't support it and so on and so forth. It can never be true.
Well, so
having said that, when you look at the promises that we are talking about, we have a situation in Ghana where about over 40% of the students who qualify from JHS to go to SHS are not able to get access to the public schools, and they have to be placed in private schools, where they pay the full cost of whatever they study in the schools. We have a case whereby the facilities even in our secondary schools are not enough to cater for even some of the students that we are sending to the secondary schools. Some have to sleep on the floor. You recall that in 2009-2010 academic year, government had to spend over 250 million Ghana cedis on just creating emergency classroom block to absorb the last 4 years in the 4 year SHS that was started by the MPP. So even if you look at that extension, the 250 million that we used to create accommodation and classroom facility for the extra students that were moving to the fourth year, and you compare it to what the MPP is saying, to the extent that everybody moving from JHS will go to SHS, then it means that we will have four times the population of the students in SHS.
All right,
which
Peter.
Will mean that we will need four times of 250 million, which will run to about 1 billion OCD only in infrastructure expansion.
All right, Peter, I'll have to cut you here. I have to cut you here for lack of time, Peter. And we will continue, this discussion when the NDC also launches its manifesto. We are very grateful for your time. Peter Bwama Otukuno is a member of the NDC communications team. Now, back to you, Mike. What surprises are we going to look at when you launch your manifesto?
Oh, to be honest, we don't intend to bring up any surprises. Manifesto launch is not about surprise. It's about commitment to the people of Ghana and telling them what we can do. We want this election to be about issues. We want the Ghanaian people to see that the MPP has an alternative message and this is what we will do. Rather than criticize us, we would rather want the NDC to also tell us what they are going to do for our education. Because, madam, as you know, the last year result, whilst we had 62% for the BECE, this time it was 48% last year. That is disgraceful. The School and the Trees project had no impact on improving our education.
All right.
We are looking at a system whereby policies will impact our education and to make sure that we create a whole new transformation to transform the life of Ghanaians.
All right, Mike. We are very grateful for your time. Mike Okwei Jr. is the NPP Deputy Greater Accra Secretary. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra. Now let's read some of your text messages. This one, no name, what a competent quality manifesto presented by the NPP. I believe in Ghana, believe in the policies of NPP, and believe in Dankwa Buzia tradition. This one also says, Nana, it is better to invest in infrastructure and improve in the teacher condition and stop this promises. Solomon Sebenu Balgobuim says, Ghanaians, Nana is trying to see if you are easy to be deluded with his free education. And this one also says, the Delegates Congress and the so-called campaign launch of the opposition NPP is full of propaganda. Isa Katanjerewa says, it is unfortunate that the NPP gathered at Machabwena in Accra to preach religious and tribal politics instead of speaking to issues. Ghanaians deserve more than that. And Noah O'Brien Bona says, it's just only the power that NPP need, not for development, and we the good people of Ghana are still watching their bad behavior. Please include your name when sending us your comments. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra. We are also live on Garden City Radio 92.1 FM, Twin City 94.7 FM, and 92.5 Radio Central. The EC continues to come under intense pressure to rescind its decision to create additional 45 new constituencies. The latest to wage into the controversy is former President Kufuor is cautioning the Electoral Commission not to go ahead with the creation of the new constituencies. Former President Kufuor at the NPP campaign launch said the EC's intention to create a constituency between now and the election is probably a time bomb, saying nothing enjoins the EC to embark on such an exercise. Let's listen to former President Kufuor.
We all pray that we go through these elections peacefully. I sense only one hitch so far, and that is in the persistence of the Electoral Commission on creating 45 new constituencies. When the register has been done for the oncoming election, the register is done, it's finished. So why does the Commission insist on creating 45 new constituencies on the eve of the election? We have only 3 months to go. Effectively, I'll say only 2 months. So why should the Electoral Commission persist in this? So we pray to the Commission to desist. There's nothing in the Constitution that enjoins the Electoral Commission to create a constituency just because the Ministry of Local Government has decided to create a district. So we want to appeal to the Electoral Commission not to do it.
Former President Kufuor there. However, the Acting Director of Public Affairs at the Electoral Commission, Christine Osu Pari, has this sharp rebuttal.
What do you mean by a time bomb?
That was how former President Kufuor described it, that he doesn't understand why the EC was rushing to create new constituencies.
We have time and again explained why we have created these new constituencies. So I don't know what other comment you want me to make. My comment won't be different from what I have said before.
Yes, what is it that is influencing you to create new constituencies?
It's a constitutional requirement. The constitution says any time census figures are published within 1 year, we should review the creation of constituencies in the country. The population census figures were published sometime this year, I believe in March this year, and the commission has a constitutional obligation to review the number of constituencies in the country, and the commission has done that.
Now, if former President Kufuor says it is a time bomb, Would you agree or disagree?
Well, I don't know what he means by that being a time bomb, but we do not think that there is any time bomb about this creation of additional 45 constituencies. I don't see where that comes in.
When President Kufuor was in power, the EC equally created new constituencies. What difference is it in the two? Is there any difference in the creation of constituencies?
Well, the formula we used at the time is the same formula we have used for the creation of the 45 new constituencies. So there is absolutely nothing different between what we did in 2004 and what we are doing today.
That was the acting director of public affairs at the EC, Christine Owusu-Parry, talking to George Ankra. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra. We're also live on 91.3 FM Radio Savannah in Tamale, 93.5 Radio BAR in Bunahafu, and 91.5 FM Volta Star Radio. He had his education at the Kachi Senior High in the Volta region. With determination, he proceeded to the Ghana Institute of Journalism to pursue a bachelor degree in communication studies. He also continued to the School of Communication Studies, University of Ghana, Legon, for a postgraduate course. This person, S. Manasseh Azuriawuni, was crowned the Journalist of the Year for 2011. Manasseh, a 27-year-old freelance journalist, received the honors for his hard work at the 17th GJ Awards night held in Accra last Saturday. Tonight, Behind the News hosts the best journalist for 2011 in the studio. You are welcome, Manasseh.
Thank you very much.
And congratulations.
Thanks a lot.
How do you feel after being adjudged the best journalist for 2011?
Well, as any ordinary person would feel, I think I feel very great and elevated. At the same time, it's a very humbling experience. And I also feel very challenged.
Well, last year you were awarded the most promising journalist during the 16th edition of the GJ Awards ceremony. Would you say that did the trick for you to aim at the ultimate?
Well, I actually did not make any conscious effort to come this far with regard to this award, because each year stories come and stories go. But last year, after the awards, a lot of people said, well, this year you are the most promising journalist, so next year we are expecting you to take the ultimate. But I didn't actually have any story in mind that I wanted to. But as time went on, I did my usual stories, and when it was time for the competition this year, I realized some of them fitted so well into the categories that were advertised. So I decided to apply, and by God's grace, the judges thought they were good enough.
Were you surprised when your name came up for the best journalist of the year?
I wouldn't say I was surprised, because when I'm doing stories, I put my best in whatever I do. And so I knew a lot of journalists applied for the awards. And I'm told this year received an unprecedented number of entries. But I knew it could be me or it could be someone else. So I didn't know it would come this early at the school, but I was hoping that one day I would be celebrated.
And surely you are being celebrated. Now, you also won the 2011 Best in News Reporting for Radio and TV and the Joint Award for Best Feature for Print and Best Report on Sanitation. I would like you to share with listeners the details of those stories or reports.
Well, with the television, it was a story about a disabled family in Central Kofi Bume who went to settle in a forest near Akpafu. Toji. And the reason was that they were, three of the children are paralyzed, they cannot talk, they cannot also walk. And so people thought it was a curse, and because of stigmatization, they had to flee. And I went to spend time with the family in the forest, covered them their night life, and did a comprehensive story for GTV, and so that was adjudged the best TV news report. I also did a story on a small boy who has been paralyzed for 3 years. He's in his fourth year now in a Crutch West district, specifically in Banda, A building collapsed on them, killed one, injured others, and he went all the way to Kolebu. But because the parents couldn't get money to bring him back for medical review, he had to be paralyzed. So I traveled there, spoke to GES authorities and all those concerned, and did a comprehensive feature on how everything went. And so it was also a story. I invested a lot of energy and time into it, and by God's grace, it paid off. And the last one was a story about a University of Ghana. Anyone who has attended University of Ghana knows of the popular Bush Canteen or Bushke. Whilst I was there, I also patronized Bush Canteen a lot, and I have a very favorite Banku joint there.
Mm-hmm.
But whilst enjoying my Banku, I realized that the sanitation is not the very best. And so I go there with a different eye and was trying to look at the sanitation situation whilst I was eating, and I had a way of getting the vendors close. I spoke to them. They gave me very interesting information. I went to the Legon Hospital to get statistics about their health conditions, and I realized there was a correlation between the sanitation of the eateries and the number of cases that are reported at the hospital in relation to food poisoning and those things. So at the end of the day, I left Legon with a story that's behind the Bush Canteen, and it also did a trick. So basically, these are some of the stories I did.
How challenging was it for you in doing these stories?
Well, the main challenge is the problem with financing stories. We are in a country where news organizations are not willing to fund stories. And so you are going out there and you have to rent your camera. You are going out there, you have to pay for your own transportation. And those who deal with cameras will tell you, when you rent a camera, it is calculated based on days. So if you are going to spend 1 week there, each day it accumulates. So before you come, you have to pay for that. You have to pay for your tapes, your transportation, a whole lot of cost. But when you come and give the story to the media organization, sometimes even to say thank you is a problem. And so it becomes a difficulty, especially when you don't have money at a particular point in time to pursue a story. You get stuck. That is one. And also, most of the stories I do are in the rural areas. Sometimes you even have to risk your life because some of the vehicles you bought and then travel to those places are so rickety that you only pray that nothing happens, because if anything happens, you are in a way moving in a coffin. So those are some of the difficulties. But I have a passion for the job, and sometimes if you are really doing what you like, when the difficulties come, normally the passion you have is able to offset whatever challenges you encounter.
So is it your passion that motivates you?
Yes, I would say my passion. If it hadn't been the passion, I might have quitted journalism for a long time, because there are offers somewhere. But I believe in life, do what you think you can do best. And I'm into journalism, and I think that's what I can do best. So why do I follow any other thing else? So it's a passion and an inner motivation. And also at times you do a story and then people see, they feel so touched, and you're willing to help sponsor the victims of that story. And you find them calling you, oh, we thank you so much, God bless you. If you hadn't covered this story, we wouldn't have got this help. And so that alone too is very inspiring and encouraging. It gives you the hope that with a little you're able to do, so many lives are touched, and so you have that inner edge to keep on doing what you are doing despite the challenges.
Well, Manasseh, you attended the Karachi Senior High School, which could be described as deprived as compared to the lives of Achimota, Pesek, and Wegehe. So how did that inspire you to pursue journalism?
Well, I did not initially want to go to Karachi Senior High School. I had to go there because of financial problems. But as I speak now, if I had gone to any other school, I might not have become a journalist, because I went there and joined the drama troupe. And so through that, I started writing plays for the drama group. And Before I completed, I was writing for the primary schools. I was writing debates and a whole lot of things. So someone saw me and said, well, one Mr. Empe, he was the GSPRO for the district. So he saw me and said, oh, you write so well. If you go and pursue journalism, it would help you. And I initially wanted to be a bank manager because the bank manager in the district we thought was the most prosperous person. He had his own car, so that was someone we all looked up to. But when he suggested that I do something in journalism, my challenge was that I did business and I knew journalism had to do with the arts, but he said, irrespective of the course you pursued, if you passed very well, you could be admitted at GIJ, that's the Ghana Institute of Journalism. So that's how come I got into the Ghana Institute of Journalism, basically because I attended Krachi Senior High School, Krasek.
So, the businessman, a bank-attained journalist. That is Manasseh Azuri Awuni in the studio with me. And Dr. Doris Yadate is a journalist and communications consultant, and she's joined us on the line. You're welcome, Doc.
Thank you very much, Agatha.
So, how do you assess the state of journalism in Ghana?
I could hear Manasseh's voice, and you just interviewed him.
Yeah.
He's my mentee, and I'm so proud of him. I think Manasseh gives us all the message of what is possible in journalism in Ghana. Yesterday, when he was announced as the Journalist of the Year, my heart just well for him, because I've always known that he can do it. And I also believe that there are many journalists in this country, younger ones than somebody like me, who have so much potential to excel. The state of journalism in Ghana, for me, it's a reflection of our society. If we think the state of journalism is below average, then the state of Ghana is also below average. So it's just a reflection.
All right. Well, there are some who think the repeal of the criminal libel law has opened the floodgates for abuse of people's rights and has devalued the standard of journalism. Do you share that view?
I think the repeal of the criminal libel law rather has given journalism the wings to fly. It has opened the floodgates, you can call it floodgates, but the floodgates of freedom. If we claim that we want to be in a democracy, then the criminal libel law has no place in a democratic country. It has not opened the, by its repeal, has not opened the floodgates for irresponsible journalism. I don't think so. What I think is happening is that we are all experimenting. You see, this country, this society, the people of Ghana lived under the thumbs, mighty thumbs of so many people for so many years. At Champong, Kuduka, Efrifa, ended up with Rawlings. Even as our earlier democratic dispensations were sort of autocratic. So we've lived under autocracy for so long. And what is happening in Ghana now is so natural. We are evolving. After you've been oppressed for so long, when you gain your freedom, the joy of gaining freedom can lead you to express it. But I think we will self-correct. I believe in human beings. I believe that we can self-correct. If we think, Ghanaians think we are going to be excessive, we'll self-correct. In the past, it was only BBC to radio. Right now, as I speak to you, there are about 140 other radio stations that people are speaking on throughout our country. That is refreshing. So there is competition in the media landscape. So everybody is trying to take a certain position, push, make their voices heard. So that what is happening now is just natural. We should be patient. Whatever is wrong with it, we'll self-correct. I'm proud of journalism in Ghana.
Well, Moving on, some critics say the editorials of some media houses in the country is a recipe for disaster as we move towards the 2012 elections. Is that the situation?
I think if the state of Ghana is strong enough, we will survive the 2012 election. We did survive the 2008 election, although it was quite tricky. So it's not only the media that can drive Ghana into hell. I don't appreciate it when people put the entire burden on the media. It's the media that can drive Ghana into war. It's accumulation, collective. We as a collective, who will drive Ghana into hell? Because whatever is said on radio, if somebody doesn't take a cutlass, a machete, a stone, and start throwing, if the political party representatives, when they come on radio, you see, it's not even journalists who are heating up Ghana, but it's the politicians who are using the media to heat up Ghana. So it's not irresponsible journalism that is causing trouble in Ghana as such.
Right.
But it's the politicians who are so desperate for power.
Now,
they use the media as a tool to get to the politicians. I think with time, even the ordinary Ghanaian who is prone to violence will begin to understand that if the son of the President Mahama, the Vice President Emeritus, the candidate of the MPP, Nana Akufo-Addo, Bawumia, all of them, if their children are not holding cutlasses, I would not allow my children to hold cutlasses. So, yes, when you just listen to the media on the surface, it sounds as if journalists are irresponsible. Mm-hmm. Of course, we have the political party, they have their own radio station. It's a competition for push our ideas and agenda out. So long as we as Ghanaians, we don't want to sink Ghana into the darkness, like happened to other countries, I think we will get fine. 2008, it looked really very difficult. I believe was on the edge of something we didn't want.
All right.
But it somehow, when the Nana Akufo-Addo came out and said he has conceded, things just calmed down. President Mills died, and we kept quiet and we moved on.
All right, Doc.
I think we have a beautiful country.
All right.
We shouldn't be too afraid. We should stop being afraid about ourselves.
Many thanks.
And have that hope.
All right. You are very grateful.
Share that message of hope to others. You should tell others that we as a people, we can do it. We have what it takes to succeed as a country, as a people.
All right. You are very grateful for your time with us.
The media is about to drive us into the abyss. No, we are not.
Dr. Doris Iyadate is a journalist and communications consultant. We are very grateful, madam.
Thank you very much.
Now, back to you, Manasseh. Some people do complain about the method used over the years to assess the best journalists. And what is your opinion on the selection process?
Well, it is said that if someone shouts, "Let's move," then that person should be willing to state in clear terms the direction to which we should move. You don't just criticize something when you don't have alternatives. There may be problems with that, but if you look at journalism competitions all over the world, you can talk about the American Society of Newspaper Editors, the CNN Journalist of the Year Awards, the Pulitzer Prize. All they do is the fact that they submit entries. And people normally say that they should get a committee to monitor the performance of journalists throughout the year, which is impossible. Because if you get 100 committee members, they cannot do that. So read all the newspapers every day. And when it's time for news, look at the number of media organizations or radio stations we have. It is impossible to do that. And so what I believe is that journalists work throughout the year. Sometimes within a year, I write more than getting 200 stories or articles. But when I'm submitting, it's only a few of them that are so strong that you'll be able to submit or tender in for awards. So it's not possible to get people to monitor all the newspapers. Let's assume if you have the committee is made up of 12 members. And when it's time for news, which 12 radio stations should they listen to? And how are they going to assess journalists based on this? So I believe that for now, there's no any other alternative. So the best way to do is to go by what is done all over the world to get journalists of the year. And that aside to what the committee normally does, they take into account other factors about the overall performance of the journalists, your number of bylines, and sometimes how effective you are. So I don't think there's any better alternative for now.
You are listening to Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra, and with me in the studio is the 2011 Best Journalist of the Year, Manasi Azuri Awuni. Now, Manasi, journalism in Ghana has come a long way since the colonial era. Would you say Ghanaian journalists have lived to their responsibility of being the gatekeepers, ensuring the rule of law and mirroring the aspirations of the people?
I will not say that, and the problem is not entirely with the journalist. As Dr. Doris Yadate rightly stated, the problem is normally shifted onto the journalist, but I believe it is not always the problem of the journalist, about the problem of our society. Go elsewhere and organizations or media houses or even governments are willing to fund journalists and then stories. You have someone coming from, let's say, the BBC, spending so many months here to do a story. The expenditure on that story alone is so huge, but that country is willing to pay for it. A GBC reporter is moving here, maybe just from here to, let's say, Cofredia to do a story, and sometimes the transportation becomes a problem. So at the end of the day, you don't shift the blame on the journalist, but shift the blame or put the blame on the system that is crippling the work of the journalist. So it is not... We have not lived up to expectation, to be sincere with you, but we should not bear the burden of the blame alone.
What do you make of the situation where some journalists have sacrificed professionalism and ethics and openly show their political bias?
Well, in every house, as we say, there's a Mensa. And some don't get into journalism for the sake of promoting a public cause. Every journalist has a political leaning in a way, because we all vote, and so you are bound to have a soft spot for one political party. But that doesn't mean you should let that drive you. There are some who have become public relations officers for politicians, but at the end of the day, when you lose your credibility, then you have no reason being in journalism. So it is a very sad situation, but I believe it is an individual decision to either live for the truth, objectivity and credibility, or to enrich yourself. And the main reason is that people may enter into journalism with a different mindset. Some think it's so lucrative, and so when they come and then it is not as lucrative as they think, they would want to use other means of getting rich, and so they would sell their conscience to the politicians, and at the end of the day do the burden of politicians instead of members of the society.
Well, this text from Joe Azangio Bungo. My brother Wuni, I am touched and I congratulate you on your achievement. Let our Bungo people know that education is the key to our development. What do you say to Joe Azangio Bungo?
Well, I greet all my kinsmen in Bungo, especially Bungo Bion. And with education, I'll say that's what has brought me this far. And that whether it is Bongo Secondary School or Kachi Secondary School, they can make it.
Well, as we head towards the 7th December elections, some analysts say the activities of the media should be strictly regulated, since some of our actions could disturb the peace we are enjoying. What do you have to tell them?
The question is, who regulates? The most important regulator is the individual himself or herself, and journalism is all about ethics or moral judgment. Most of the time you come across situations that you as a reporter would have to decide there and then what to do. And sometimes the news editor even has no control over the content. Let's assume we are at a polling station and something is happening, and then you are live on air. There's one word which you can say that will throw the entire process into chaos. And so it may be the truth, but you as the reporter there who are reporting live should know that whatever you do may have the consequences, either negative or positive. And so it is your decision at that particular point in time. So even if there's strict regulation and you still go ahead to do it, maybe you may be arrested later on, but the harm would already have been caused. So I think the best regulator should be the journalist. We should develop a sort of peer review mechanisms even within our newsrooms, and then be guided by self-censorship, and also know that we are the greatest beneficiaries of the peace we are enjoying, because in certain countries you can't go and then criticize the government and then go back to sleep.
Well, I believe there are some people that you would like to acknowledge for their contribution towards your success story.
Well, I am very grateful to my father for education, and I also thank my teachers, Kete Krachi LA Primary A School, Henkel Memorial JHS, Krachi Senior High School, Ghana Institute of Journalism, and the School of Communication Studies, Legon. I also would want to thank editors and reporters of GBC, GTV. I started my journalism 2 weeks into GIJ with news commentaries, and GBC has been a platform that actually helped me to improve a lot on my skills. Despite the challenges which you and I know, I think Radio Ghana, and especially all the producers of news commentary, Baita Gama, Edmond, and all those who have produced news commentary, I think they've helped me a lot, and I'm very grateful to them for the opportunity to explore my talent.
All right, Wanasi, thanks for your time. And behind the news, we wish you brighter days ahead in your journalism career.
Thank you very much.
Manasi Azuri Awune is the Journalist of the Year for 2011, and he was my studio guest. Before we go, let's read some of your text messages. Alasan Zanduli Yendi says, I entreat Ghanaians to vote for the NPP because it's the only party that can transform our lives. The NDC should give us a break. If they cannot tell Ghanaians what they can do, they should stop worrying about what the NPP say. Koja Samoa Shanti region, I am not an NPP member again because of our personal attacks and falsehood. Malik Kamatek says, Kufuor created many constituencies, so he should give us a break. Bawadi Isaac Jirapa, I think Manasseh Awuni deserves more than Journalist of the Year award. He always reports what is happening on the ground, especially the way he writes his news commentary. Master Adam, the NDC is confused as to what to do after destroying all the social interventions established by the NPP, such as NYEP, NHIS, and the Metro Mass Transport. Noah O'Brien Bona, God bless President Mahama for his good work done, and he will continue to lead Ghana peacefully. Timor Richard Tamale, congratulations to Manasseh Awuni. You are pride of the North, Ghana, and Africa as a whole. The whole world will hear your voice. Daniel Kwasi Ashoman, former President Kufuor and the NPP, cannot interfere with the duties of the EC to make it appear as if it's not credible, because we can all attest to the credibility of the EC. And Vivian Sunyang, John Mahama will win the 2012 elections. Many thanks for your text messages. And this is where we draw the curtains down behind the news. Isaac Yao, do start behind the controls. My producers were Christopher Sidu, Brian Tagama, Edmond Tete, and Phyllis Kofi Ibrahim. Quartin was the summarizer. My name is Agatha Samoa, and many thanks for staying tuned.